With all the advances in modern medicine, what's the first thing a doctor usually says when you come into his office? Stick out your tongue and say, ah, right? They're still doing that. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I have no idea why they want to see your tongue. I don't know what they can tell about your health by looking at your tongue, but there must be something indicative about our health that they can see that way. Now, what is true in the medical field is also true in the spiritual realm. The condition of the tongue tells a lot about a person's spiritual health. That's the underlying thought in our text this morning, the first 12 verses of James chapter 3. Here James gives us the plain truth about profanity. Now, by profanity, James is not just thinking of foul language, of conversation punctuated with four-letter words, but of the many sins of our speech. Webster's dictionary defines profanity as to treat something sacred with abuse, irreverence, or contempt. So we're not just talking about those words that you used to not be able to say on television. I think they can say just about anything anymore. Or those for which your mother used to threaten to wash your mouth out with soap. How many of you have heard that one before? Now, certainly that's included by what James talks about, but it's not restricted to that. Now, James does not specify in this paragraph all of the particular forms of evil speech that he has in mind. But he does mention one in another chapter. In chapter 4, he talks about criticism of others that springs from a judgmental attitude. And certainly that is one of the sins of speech that would be included in this text this morning. He could include all of those that are mentioned in the book of Proverbs that we saw a few months ago. Things like lying, gossip, thoughtless and careless words, speaking too much, exaggerating. All of these things would also fit into this category. Now, this subject of the tongue is something James is very concerned with. If you go through the book of James, you will find that it's mentioned at least once in every chapter. All five chapters of this letter of James refers to the tongue in one way or another, or to our words. But these 12 verses in particular seem to expand upon something he wrote earlier. At the end of chapter 1, he writes, "If anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless." You see, last week we looked at the connection James makes between our faith and our works. Here he continues that same line of thinking, but now he's talking about the connection between faith and our words. You see, there's nowhere in the relationship of faith and works that you find more evident than in how we speak. Because what we are will inevitably be disclosed by what we say. Now, as important as it is, the tongue is also impossible to control, as James mentions in James 3:8. And I think for that reason, my former minister many years ago, when he preached on this passage, said that these verses are some of the most convicting verses that you and I will find anywhere in God's Word. It does not matter of our age, our educational background, our vocation, none of those things matter. We all need to hear what James has to say on this topic. James first deals with the power of the tongue. Think about it. God gave us the tongue as the instrument for us to express how we think and feel. It's something that no other creature has the way we do. We are unique in this way. And it can be our greatest asset, or it could also be our greatest liability. I mean, it's one of the greatest powers God has given to mankind. With the tongue, we can praise God. We can pray to God and commune with Him. We can preach the Word. We can lead a lost soul to Christ. What a privilege that is. But the tongue can just as powerfully damage and destroy others. What a peril that is. Now chapter 3 begins with an unusual warning that not everyone should try to be teachers within the church. Now, I would imagine that most Sunday school attendants cringe when they hear this verse because they're always trying to find teachers. It's hard to get people that were willing to fill that function. But James points out that teachers face a stricter evaluation by God than others. You might wonder, why is that? Why is it that teachers say a more critical judgment than others? And I think it's because it's the tool that he uses or she uses, the tongue. When you teach in a group setting, you are affecting many more people than you do simply one-to-one. And when we sin with the tongue in public, especially if we're acting as a speaker for God, that is what He will hold us in account for. You see, the ability to influence and to guide others with our words, that's one of the powers of the tongue. And it can be used for good, but it can also be used for bad. James then uses a couple of examples of how a very small object can direct and control a much larger object. Now, I know there are some folks in our church that have much more experience in this particular realm than I do. When it comes to horses, to me, a horse is a magnificent animal. Just to be near one, and I'm not near them that often, but to be near one, they're big, they're powerful. I think they're majestic looking. They're just a stately animal. And they're strong, too. Horses are very, very strong. In fact, it would be about impossible for a person with their bare hands to be able to control a horse if the horse wanted to do what they wanted to do. But what do? We take a little piece of metal called a bit. Get that in the horse's mouth, and with that, the rider who might weigh one-fifth or less of what the horse does can steer that horse, can guide him, direct him right where he wants to go. Same is true for a ship. You think of a big ship. Think of a big cruise ship. How huge it is. I have never been on one, but I have been told that when you're on a cruise ship, you don't even know you're in the water. It is so big that it is much more stable. But you know, that huge ship is controlled by a very small rudder. For example, the Queen Elizabeth weighed 83,000 tons. 83,000 tons is what the cruise ship, the Queen Elizabeth, weighs. The rudder of that same ship weighed 140 tons. Less than two-tenths of the total weight of that ship. But that rudder steered the whole vessel. By simply moving that rudder one way or another, you could steer the whole ship. And one person could be in charge of where that boat went. And just as the bit determines the direction of the horse, just as the rudder determines the direction of the ship, so our tongue can determine our destiny. You see, Jesus said, by your words you will be acquitted, or by your words you will be condemned. The tongue also holds the potential for health or for harm for others. Notice James compares the tongue to a small spark of fire. You think, well, that might be a bit of an overstatement. But consider the words of Solomon in Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Just think about the idea of fire. How How can fire be beneficial to us? Well, it can keep us warm. It can cook our food. It can provide power. There's many good uses of fire. In fact, someone said that civilization really began when man was able to harness the use of fire. It has tremendous possibilities, but it can also be very destructive as well. I'm sure you've all heard of the Great Chicago Fire back in 1871 that raged for several days. 17,500 buildings were destroyed. 300 people died. 125,000 people were left homeless. Do you know how the Chicago Fire started? Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over a lantern. At least that's how the story goes. But it starts as a very small flame, and suddenly it burns out of control. Words can be just as powerful, and they can be just as devastating. Some of our words are what Norman Wright calls gunpowder words that cause an explosion of emotions that hurt the other person. Another writer suggests, it may be the tongue has slain more than all the bullets and bombs of battle. I really like what Morgan Blake, who was a sports writer for the Atlanta Journal, wrote about one particular kind of destructive speech. I am more deadly than the screaming shell from the howitzer. I win without killing. I tear down homes, break hearts, and wreck lives. I travel on the wings of the wind. No innocence is strong enough to intimidate me. No purity pure enough to daunt me. I have no regard for truth, no respect for justice, no mercy for the defenseless. My victims are as numerous as the sands of the sea and as often just as innocent. I seldom forgive and I never forget. My name is gossip. Just a word. Just a phrase can wreck all of that havoc. The tongue is a powerful force indeed. James goes on. He gives another description of the tongue in verse 8. He calls it a restless evil full of deadly poison. Now, I'm sure that he had in mind some Old Testament references here as well. Psalm 140, verse 3 says that men make their tongue sharp as a serpent's, and under their lips is the poison of vipers. Proverbs says that the poison produced by the tongue destroys the neighbor, and it brings the one who sins to ruin also. Now, I don't know about you, I don't like snakes. If I see a snake, even on television, I get a chill up my spine, literally. I don't like snakes. But the human tongue is even more ominous. Its venom is more deadly than a snake's because it can destroy morally, socially, economically, and spiritually. I like the way my former pastor put it. As a cyanide pill in your mouth that can be bitten at any time. But when you bite it, it won't kill you but somebody else. Because we can assassinate another person's reputation by gossip. We can murder a character by slander. We can crush another person's spirit with criticism. And oh, how often this happens in the church. Countless church splits and fits have been started by the unguarded word, the whispered criticism, the suspicious question. Ministers and whole ministries have been ruined by poisonous words. You might wonder, where does this all come from? Well, James tells us in verse 6, it itself is set on fire by hell. You see, Satan loves to use our words to divide and conquer. Ruth Paxson, in her classic work, The Wealth, Walk, and Warfare of the Christian, writes, Satan divides Christian from Christian by injecting poison of unwarranted suspicion, unloving intolerance, intense dislike, corroding jealousy, and acrimonious criticism. These poisons go through the system and find an outlet through the tongue. A full full-fledged church quarrel has started with the membership taking sides and divided into factions. And you know what happens when that takes place? You know what happens when a church is divided because of careless words? Satan laughs and laughs. Because people on the outside say, if that's Christianity, you can have it. And Satan knows he's won a great victory. Before we move on, I want to share a story that I read this past week. I realize this is a pretty serious subject, and we could maybe lighten it up a bit. A lady told her preacher that she liked him except for one thing. She asked if she could take a pair of scissors and shorten his tie. Obviously, this didn't happen to me. So, he kindly agreed. And when she was through, he asked if he could have the same privilege. And then he said, stick out your tongue. Well, thirdly, James points out the pretense of the tongue in verses 9 through 12. He says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come both praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives? Can a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. James here is pointing out this Jekyll and Hyde characteristic of the tongue. Now, how absurd it is that with the same mouth we can bless God and blister others. And yet, how often does this happen? We sing praises to God in church on Sunday and we're shouting obscenities in traffic on Monday morning. Or maybe Sunday afternoon. It may not even take that long, right? I remember one instance in college. We were in the cafeteria about to have lunch and one of my classmates came. He set his tray down, bowed his head for a minute, got up, and I mean the minute he opened his eyes, he started ripping into the food, ripping into the people that prepared it, and just went on and on. I finally, when he paused to take a breath, I said, didn't you just pray for that food? Now we can go from one second to the next, praising God and being critical or cursing others. The truth is, the tongue cannot produce both praise and cursing, any more than a spring can produce both fresh water and salt water, or any more than a tree can produce two different kinds of fruit. It just can't happen. This goes back to what James wrote in the last chapter. Just as a lifestyle of consistent sin betrays professed faith, so our words will show the reality or the unreality of our Christianity. Chuck Swindoll notes, like a bucket draws water from a well, so the tongue dips down and pours out whatever is in the heart. If the source is clean, that's what the tongue communicates, but if it's contaminated, the tongue will expose it. Or to use another illustration, think of your tongue as a thermometer. Now, I know that usually when you're going to take our temperature, you stick the thermometer under your tongue, find out what your body temperature is. But think of the tongue itself as a thermometer. It's an indicator of the true condition of our spiritual health. You want to know how well you're doing in your Christian life? Think about your words. Think about the things that you've said and how you say them. It's a good indication. But you know, it's more than that. Not only is it a thermometer, it also acts like a thermostat. It can also regulate our spiritual health. See, the tongue is a controlling instrument. It doesn't just indicate direction, but it determines it. The control of the tongue is more than an evidence of spiritual maturity. It's actually the means to it. Dietrich Bonhoeffer called this term the ministry of holding one's tongue. And he writes, often we combat our evil thoughts most effectively if we absolutely refuse to allow them to be expressed in words. Think about that. Because more often than not, this is how Satan works in our lives. He tempts us with a thought. At some point, it comes out our mouth before we actually do it. How often is that the case? And how many times could we stop that process cold if we simply refuse to let those things come out our mouth? You see, it's not a sin to be tempted. We can't control that. We cannot control the thoughts that come into our minds. We do control what we do with those thoughts. And if we can put the clamps down and say, I'm not going to let it come out of my mouth, we'll be a long way to defeating that temptation. Now this leads us to a dilemma. On the one hand, James clearly teaches that no one can control the tongue. He said it's a restless evil. It's full of deadly poison. It's like a fire that rages out of control. But I don't want to leave you with a hopeless feeling. Because the truth is that while no one can control the tongue, it is ultimately a spiritual problem, and God alone can control our tongues. There is something that can be done about it. I know James is pretty negative in this text. He's really showing the potential damage and danger of our words. But let us not forget that God alone has the power. And He wants more than anything to come in and take control. And so we can pray with the psalmist, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. We can also say, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence. Boy, don't you wish sometimes you'd had that muzzle? It's usually after we've said something that we were. But here's something we can do beforehand. Every day, make it a matter of prayer. Lord, I give You control over what I say. Lord, give me Your strength so that I might not hurt somebody else with my words, that I might not mislead, that I might not be a bad testimony for You because of what comes out of my mouth. Perhaps we all need a spiritual checkup this morning. When the great physician enters the room, the first thing he might say is, stick out your tongue. Because our words are a very clear indicator of our spiritual health. What do you think our checkup would show?